Welcome to the Elemental Awakening. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Elemental Awakening. Today, I have a special guest. His name is Payton Nyquist. He is the founder and CEO of Numinous Wellness, which is a company we're going to talk a bit about today. That is, in my opinion, you know, paving the way for something very new here in Canada, North America, potentially the world. And an industry that is very dear to me, and I see a lot of potential for healing and helping transforming humanity. So, Payton, welcome to the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you meet people synchronistically in life, and I'll never forget one time I was in line at customs from Toronto, and I saw this guy and his girlfriend walking in this cool hat on, I think with a feather in it. And for some reason, I thought, oh, that guy looks interesting. And just so happens that we got off the same plane and we're actually going to the same place. We end up sitting beside each other in an ayahuasca ceremony. And, you know, we became friends. And if you've ever done ayahuasca, there's a good chance that if you do ceremony with something, there's a bond that's formed that usually lasts a long time. So that's how I met Payton. And I started learning about some of his passions and a bit of his story, and I'll let him tell it because it is a really interesting story. So Payton, tell us about like who you are and who you were and how you got into what you're doing today, I guess is what I'm curious about.
And it was funny. I was reflecting a little bit before hopping on here, and, you know, really you've sort of been, you and I met really at the very starting stages of Numinous, and you know, I've sort of been a good friend throughout this whole thing. So I'm stoked to be able to chat a little bit about this because you've been there since the beginning. But who am I or who was I? That's a good
question. Yeah, the backstory, the backstory that led you here, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mental health and mental well-being has been something that's been really interesting to me since really my mid to late teens. I'd struggled with some severe chronic pain issues my whole life. And, you know, I was introduced to a lot of mental health treatments. You know, I was brought up in a family that struggled with some mental health issues, and pretty young there was some light shone on that. So was really a dedicated advocate of mental health and mental well-being back, you know, early in those days. And I was pretty public about it as a teenager, sort of for two reasons. One is, you know, I saw a lot of friends who were struggling, and I always felt if I shared a little bit of what I was doing, maybe they would, you know, be interested in doing the same. You know, the other little small part of me also, you know, was hoping that more people would do that at that age so that I wasn't the only teenager going to see their therapist and stuff like that too. So, so there was that piece of it, but, you know, I continued to work on my mental health and my physical health. But my chronic pain issues just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And, I'd never tried a psychedelic. I'd actually, my family struggled with some addiction issues. And so I'd always sort of shied away from drug use, but got myself to a place where I'd tried everything and nothing was working. And, you know, turned to psychedelics really as a last ditch effort to try and save my life, and did so, and came out of that experience really, you know, in the beginning, just trying to figure out how I could give back to something that saved my life. I never intended on quitting my job and starting a company and doing this full time. But, you know, at the time there was really no industry interest in the psychedelic space. There was a lot of really great research that was going on, but there was this gap that I was seeing between all of this really great not-for-profit research that was happening and a real lack of infrastructure on the other side of that to be able to help hold and make the transition. And, you know, I had a finance background by trade. And so was just seeing, you know, I know how difficult it is to raise money, let alone not-for-profit money. And if there was a way that we could work in collaboration with these research groups, not to get in the way, but to help support and really work in collaboration to drive this, you know, category forward and start to expand access for people. You know, that was really what started Numinous and why we got off of the ground.
Yeah, you had a unique background. I think you came from the cannabis industry and helping companies raise there initially. And that's sort of because for me, I was always like, yeah, like I want to start a psychedelic company, but I wouldn't even know where to start. And, you know, even when we were talking about it, there wasn't much going on a few years back. And it looks like you're one of the pioneers to say, okay, like let's start this up. And fast forward, what, 2 years later, now it's like everyone I talk to is trying to start up a psychedelic startup or a mushroom company of some sorts. And, and, you know, I really commend you for being one of those first, you know, trailblazers to say, okay, let's actually do something. And, you know, there's always, I think, certain people that obviously everything happens to them for a reason, you know, like all the things that I guess were pain points in your life that led you to that last ditch opportunity to say, I'll just try anything, you know, combine that with, you know, seeing how the cannabis industry grew very quickly and some of the, I guess, bottlenecks and challenges that that faced and some of the successes that came out of it as well, pretty much primed you for like, you know, top candidates say, hey, like if someone's going to do it, it should be you. So I guess one of my questions is after seeing, you know, the whole cannabis rise and now it's sort of like in a limbo area, like what do you think is going to happen now that there's all of this attention starting to move toward the psychedelic space or a plant medicine space? And why do you think it's different and why do you think it's similar? You know?
Yeah, you know, I think, and going back to when we started, I think one of the other great tools in my toolbox is, I really didn't know at the time. I didn't know enough to I just knew there was a lot of energy and a lot of passion behind what we were doing. And, you know, luckily that led me to pull on, you know, experts in the field. And, you know, we've been really grateful to have the people around us who've really helped shape what the company has become. You know, learning from cannabis, I think a few things, and you know, I experience in cannabis as well as just funding new industry. That was a lot of what I was doing was a lot of new industry, capital raising and supporting of, and I think with cannabis, the approach is, you know, there's going to be there, you're seeing a ton of interest in the psychedelic space. There's going to be more interest in the psychedelic space and how we use those resources. And how we work together, I think there's going to be a lot of learning that comes from the cannabis space that is going to, you know, help learn from some of the mistakes that were made there. You know, if there's one thing that I think we all hold a huge amount of gratitude for in the cannabis space is it actually just opened people's minds to the fact that like drug policy change is possible and can happen. And so I think that's, you know, it's funny. I talk to people. When we were supporting cannabis, the big question was like, is this going to become legal or not? You talk to people about psychedelics and it's like this foregone conclusion that like, oh no, that's going to happen. You know, just wait, which is great, but there's still a ton of work to be done. And I think, you know, if you look at the size of the thing that we're talking about addressing in terms of mental health, and not only mental health, but when you move from mental health into mental wellness and preventative mental health as well, it's huge. It's the largest societal problem that we have. And it's gonna take more than a handful of, you know, Canadian public companies to try and figure this out. There needs to be collaboration. There needs to be working together. There needs to be sharing of resources and not wasting of resources. You know, this is a huge, huge thing. And so I think that's some of the learning that's going to happen from the cannabis space versus, you know, the cannabis space, there was collaboration, but there was also a lot of competition. I always love when people ask me like, you know, who are your competitors? Because for me, I'm so glad to see that there are other groups coming to the space. It means what we're trying to do is working. And I think that's so important.
Yeah, that was one thing I learned when I got into when we opened our center in Toronto. It was a float center. And it was the first time I'd ever been in a business where I realized all the owners of different float centers wanted to support the other owners because it would lift up the industry. You know, it was like shocking to me. I was like, oh, we're competitors, or like, I don't want to tell you my secrets. And everyone was willing to help me. And so then I was like willing to help them. And I realized that that actually supports the industry as a whole, makes it better, stronger. Whereas, you know, when you're trying to kill everyone around you, it creates this very toxic environment and you know, it slows progress down for sure. Mm-hmm. And so that sort of leads to my next question, because I'm sure you've seen it in the cannabis industry, and I'm sure we're going to see it now. When there's a lot of interest, there's a lot of money to be made. You know, how do you identify the real companies versus like the pump and dumps, the guys who are pretending to create a psychedelic company? And because I know people are like, oh, I want to invest in this industry, but you know, there's going to be a lot of real companies, and then there's going to be a lot of people just trying to make money and not really have any solid. Anything that comes to mind around that that you can sort of shine some light on?
Yeah, I think it always comes down to people. You know, take the people and you know, the groups that are involved with those people. I think that's the first thing that you should always look at. You know, not to toot our own horn or anything like that, but you know, we recently announced our collaboration with MAPS, and you know, for me, that was a huge moment for me, because of, you know, MAPS is really, I would argue, they're the reason why psychedelics in North America are where they are today, and you know, haven't done any and haven't done any industry partnerships really or anything like that. So for them to you know, agree to collaborate with us and really like be vocal about it was a huge just a huge vote of confidence for us, and we're super grateful for that. So I think you need to look at the people. I think you need to look at, you know, what their business plans are, what they're planning on doing, and I think that will help sort of navigate that that process for sure. And I think the thing that I always go back to is like, for people to just get an education about what it is we're talking about in terms of psychedelics. There's this huge interest in the psychedelic space, but still so much, such a lack of information around what it is, what the space represents, right? And I think, you know, it's one of these amazing things where the fact is even more impressive than the fiction is. You know, MAPS having an over 70% success rate treating people with treatment resistant PTSD, like that's crazy. That's just an insane number. It's an insane number,
especially when, you know, that would be insane if it was just PTSD. Mm-hmm. But it's even crazier when it's treatment resistant. So they've already tried other things and had no success. And you know, so that sort of leads to my next question, which is, you know, like I think some of the cannabis industry, when it was evolving, you know, there was this like medical side, and there are medical benefits to cannabis, which I think is a small percentage of why people consume it. I think most people consume it recreationally, if you had to sort of put it on a spectrum of like how it's consumed. Mm-hmm. So moving now into the psychedelic space, you know, I see, again, up until recently, it's mainly been recreational use of LSD, psilocybin. What is that sort of, how is that going to change now as the market sort of evolves? A lot of the research is obviously on medicinal use or, you know, in a medical setting. And then I guess to go even further, is there a market or space for a more recreational use, because that's what I'm sort of wondering. And then the in between is, you know, should the experience feel more like a clinical experience when you're doing a treatment, or should it feel like it's more of a recreational, because the healing I think is what is the outcome that's desired and what brings you there. So maybe you want to touch a bit on where you see like you guys as a company and where the industry in general is going to go.
Yeah, great question. I think, you know, psychedelics and plant medicines, like they are just extremely powerful tools. You know, and the container that they're used in is so important. And, you know, learning, I think, some of the mistakes from the 60s, you know, I think what's so exciting about the psychedelic space, as you mentioned, is there's all of this research that's been done now. And, you know, with cannabis, there was a real lack of actual research that was done. And now it's sort of trying to catch up and trying to, you know, this is what's good for sleep. This is what's good for pain management, all those things, you know, it's sort of a figure it out after. Whereas with psychedelic, it's thousands of trials and things like that going like, here's the information. And I think, you know, I think the approach is I really like the way that the space is evolving from a let's really, you know, let's look at some of these really serious indications that really, really need to be at the focus point. And I think that will help pave the way for maybe not recreation, but a more wellness style approach. You know, one of the things we talk a lot about at Numinous is, you know, preventative mental health. Let's get people, let's deal with their mental health before, you know, they're in the healthcare system, before they're showing up in the emergency room, before they're, you know, getting to some of these dire states. Let's try and treat them before that happens. But I think, you know, I think the way to pave the way for that is to show the effectiveness of you know, some of these real serious indications that we're talking about helping treat. And I think that will continue to evolve and continue to help create the containers for a real lasting infrastructure in this space versus, again, you know, what happened in the 60s where, you know, LSD, all these things, it was, you know, it's funny, you think about what that represented. And obviously I'm not from the 60s, but, you know, you look at what they were talking about, which is, you know, they didn't want to fight in wars that they didn't believe in. They were more about, you know, love and unity and all those types of things. If you met someone today that was saying those things, you'd go, sounds like a pretty well-balanced individual, right? But back then it was this, you know, those are hippies or those are, you know, those are those types of people. And so I think, you know, setting up that infrastructure, helping the people who really, really need help right now, will pave the way for more of a wellness style approach. In terms of just recreation, I think that needs to be approached really cautiously. As I mentioned, these are powerful tools.
We met at what I would call a recreational healing retreat center. So, you know, it exists now, I'd say, in some parts of the world. There's a few examples that, you know, we've talked about. Do you think that's something that could become mainstream? I know there's a few places also like in Amsterdam that use psilocybin. Do you see that coming like to the Western, like North America? And if so, like how far away do you think we are from something like that?
I think so. I think it's, you know, it's not the immediate. I think the immediate will be, you know, more medical, maybe is the wrong word, but heavier structured support for people going through this work. But I do think that there's definitely the opening for that. And I think, you know, I guess if that's sort of what we're considering recreation, I think just those well-intentioned containers with, again, the more trained and experienced people who are providing and facilitating this work, the more impactful it can be for people.
Yeah, and I guess there's different sort of tiers to what we consider recreation. You know, I guess at the far end of the spectrum would be like go to a convenience store and you could buy truffles, like that would be like full recreation, which I don't think is a good idea, but more like having retreat centers where it's a curated experience with staff, with support staff, with medical staff, where you don't need to be sick or have mental health issues, where you can go and explore your own consciousness or explore your own, you know, like inner state, you know, because I feel everyone should have the right, if they choose, to sort of see what's out there, to go and have a place that they feel safe to do it and not have to get it on the black market and feel like they're going to get in trouble. And and I know that even where you are, they just recently made some changes to, I think it was in Vancouver, to decriminalizing psychedelics. Is that right? Or
they're moving towards decriminalization in Vancouver. You know, you've seen what's happened. I love what Oregon did, where they moved towards decriminalization, and with psilocybin, what they did was they decriminalized psilocybin assisted psychotherapy. And there's a 2-year, very intentional rollout of that container. And, you know, it comes with therapeutic guidelines and manuals and all of that in Oregon.
And so you'd have to be a psychotherapist to administer
I don't think you have to be a psychotherapist, but you there's some training that's going to be involved. I think the training piece is really interesting. You know, that's one of the big things we've been discussing and working with MAPS is, you know, some kind of certification program or something like that. You know, the one thing we're hoping not to see is, you know, obviously the costs of these treatments, you know, can really vary depending on who it is you're working with, and to have, you know, a very heavily registered person administering one of these therapies can make it very expensive. Yeah. So I think if we can, but I do think there needs to be some kind of standard or some kind of certification program around training so that you know when you're working with someone, okay, you know, this is what they've gone through. They check all the boxes. I know I'm going to be safe with this person versus, you know, I think one of the things we have to be careful with, and luckily, you know, the underground community is such a, I mean, incredible, some of the most amazing people I've ever met.
They've been doing the field study for the last 30-40 years, you know. It never stopped. It just went underground because in my opinion it's so effective, you know. It's you know, I'm sure like in cannabis, if they did a pain study and they compared it against, you know, like a pain medication, mm-hmm. you might see some similar outcomes, you might see a little bit of difference, mm-hmm. but I know with the psychedelics you're seeing like immediate different, yeah. like, wow, like there's something here that's not
yep.
in other places. So it's not the same. Which well, I think sort that's of, a, yeah.
I just on that one point, you know, this is one of the things we talk a lot about at Numinous is curative intent with psychedelics, right? A lot of time when we think about, okay, you're depressed, here's an antidepressant, you're a depressed person, right? And you'll be that, you'll have that moniker for the rest of your life. And we'll get you on this management thing. We'll get you a therapist, but this is going to be something that you're going to work on for the rest of your life. With psychedelics, we're saying, no, like let's cure you, right? Yeah. Let's get you on a healthier path, right? If you, and I love Tim Ferriss does a great job of explaining this in terms of, you know, you need to think of it as like knee surgery, right? And when you go for knee surgery, there's prep, there's all the work you need to do before, there's the intervention, and then there's rehab after. Right. And, you know,
led into my next question. That was just my next question is how important, you know, is the integration and what do you think is out there that works? So that's the rehab is the integration after. And I know there's no standard right now, like what works and like from your perspective, you know, are you guys working on something? Are you looking outside for people to advise? Like, I know the industry as a whole doesn't have this answer yet from my perspective. Just curious what you guys are.
It's the most important thing, I think. You know, again, going back to the knee surgery analogy, if I do knee surgery on you and the next day you're out trying to play basketball again, chances are pretty good you're going to bang that knee up again, right? And I think, you know, the integration side of this is everything, hugely, hugely important, and needs to really be, you know, again, it's this thing that has always been talked about, at least from when I got involved in the psychedelic community, it was integration, integration, integration. And everybody was saying how important it was and nobody had it totally figured out yet. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. there's a few things there. One is if you look at indigenous communities who have been working with these medicines for thousands of years, you know, their integration was their life. They were in community. They were living in tribal settings. They were in nature. They were, you know, they had that support, right? They didn't have some of these, you know, they weren't living in condos, you know, stacked on top of one another with no connection and phones in their pockets and all these things. So,
and having to hide their emotions, you know, for when they go to work and for their family, just bottle up whatever's coming out.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So the integration piece is something for us to, I think, as a Western culture to figure out like, okay, like, what does that look like? We definitely know, you know, there's supportive practices, there's working with a skilled practitioner or therapist who can help, you know, guide you through that process. But it's in terms of the secret sauce, that's it for sure.
Yeah. And I think it's gonna be a challenge, but from my personal opinion, like, the educational component is there, like to teach them practices. It's going to be hard, I think, to get people to change their habits, which is also something you would work on. Yep. I think the biggest thing that needs to be figured out is how do you create a community for people who have gone through something that they can openly share. And I know with like medical, like HIPAA, and not being able to sort of disclose information and like getting patients to now join a group together is could be a challenge. But I think like that's what people need is a support network of people they can openly share with, connect with, you know, and grow as a person with, as they're learning to sort of integrate the things they've learned through their experiences. I think far outweighs any sort of courses or training they can do or one-on-one. You know, you see the blue zones, people live the longest when they're in community. You know, you see like when people are isolated and lonely, they're more likely to be depressed and have mental health issues and all of these kind of things. So I think the community aspect is one that needs to get figured out and, you know, plays a big role in all of this. That's just my opinion, but that's what I've seen. And even looking at from your example of indigenous communities, like they all sit in community. Nowadays, people do psychedelics, they travel somewhere and then they break off from that sort of group, or, you know, they do it in a setting where they sort of have to pretend that they did it. They got to hide it, or they can't really share it, or people don't understand it. So they feel awkward, or something comes up that's very sort of intimate or troubling or traumatic. Like, they're not just going to share it with random people. But maybe if you're a group of people that you feel you can confide in, you know, that could make all the difference in the world. So it'll be interesting to see how these things evolve, and I hope to play some sort of role in some of these things, because it's my passion as well. But yeah, I think you nailed it there. I love that analogy of the knee surgery. I'm definitely going to use that in the future. I guess one of my last questions is more back. You mentioned one already with PTSD. What studies have you seen that really stood out to you? And what studies are you excited about that are going on now that you guys are aware of that you think could be the game changers as far as like getting people to understand the power of, you know, these medicines?
Yeah. You know, the PTSD one is such a good one. You know, Dr. Gabor Mate, who's on our advisory board, I align a lot with his thinking around trauma and trauma really being at the root of a lot of our mental health issues today. And, you know, if you can heal the trauma, that causes, whether it's suicide, depression, anxiety, addiction, if you can heal that trauma, you know, that's what makes a huge impact. So I really love referring to that. I think, you know, the studies around depression, I think, are really, really interesting. You know, I think the end of life anxiety work that's being done is a really important one to look at as well. And I think, you know, for us, we've got two things that we're supporting in the new year. One is helping support on the PTSD work with MAPS. And the other one is psilocybin for substance use disorder. And I, you know, obviously addiction is a huge, huge issue. And so that's something that we're really excited about.
There was a study, right? A psilocybin study with chain smokers. I don't know the specifics of smoking cessation. I know it was like an 80% cure rate of even 2 years down the road. It's like
there's an interview with a woman who she was actually a part of a psilocybin study, but I don't think it was actually the smoking cessation one. Okay. And I think this is what actually spawned the smoking cessation, is they interviewed this woman, and I'm paraphrasing, but she, you know, she said, you know, it's interesting. I've been a smoker my whole life, and I have no interest in smoking anymore. And they asked, you know, they said, well, why? And she said, you know, just really, I went through this experience of dying, and I just, you know, came out of that really realizing, like, it's not good for me. I shouldn't be doing this to my body. And it was such like a like, well, yeah, of course. And I think this is, and, you know, you and I have had some pretty expansive psychedelic experiences together. And, you know, sometimes it's a doctor or a loved one saying, hey, you should stop smoking. And, you know, sometimes it's a man with a crocodile head and a psychedelic experience telling you to stop smoking. And that might be the one that you listen to. But, you know,
it's so true. And what I found through many of my experiences, like, you know, the answers, you know, like, it's so simple. But it's until you experience it in that way that it just clicks. It's like, okay, like, I get it now. Yep. Like, no more this, or I have to do that, or I'm changing this. And it's usually the most simplest insights or truths that you sort of know are there, but you never really just like, it never really clicks. And then all of a sudden, for some reason, everything just aligns. And it's like, okay, now I fully understand. It's not just like, I understand from here. It's like, I fully understand with my heart, my mind, soul, like, this is what I need to do, or this is how I need to change.
So
I'm excited. I'm excited for more people to learn about this, to understand this, to experience this. And, you know, I think, like you said, like, more than the ability to heal people in pain, I think it has an ability to shift the entire world, you know, to want less wars, to be more conscious about the environment, to sort of be less angry and violent to each other, you know, and this is what really excites me a lot about this space as a whole. And hopefully, you know, like, it's just going to continue to grow the way it's growing now. You know, I hope the momentum has started, it seems like, now, especially in the last couple of months. And, you know, I can't wait to see what the next couple of years are going to look like.
Yeah, me too. I think just quickly on the, you know, the point you're making around wellness, you know, I think it's interesting. We go to the gym to, you know, there's no, we continue to go to the gym to work on our bodies. There's no like, okay, I did it, I don't have to go to the gym anymore. We continue to exercise. We go to the dentist, even when we have perfect teeth, we still go to the dentist to make sure that they're staying that way. And our mental health needs to be, you know, it's a muscle. It needs to be developed and it needs to be worked upon. And I think that's where there's a huge opportunity here with psychedelics is, you know, yes, absolutely, you know, working on some of these very, really, really serious indications, but let's also work on our mental well-being. And so we don't have to end up in those states anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Yeah. So yeah, just to wrap up here, is there anything that I didn't ask you that you wish that I had, or something that's, you know, you're excited about right now in life?
Yeah, I think it's again, like, so encouraging to see where this space is going. And the you know, from what we've seen, especially in Canada, the regulation is continuing to change and support that. I always encourage people to just try and get as much education as you can. You know, look at the work MAPS is doing, look at the work that Johns Hopkins is doing, get an understanding of what it, you know, again, the fact is way more impressive than the fiction is. And all you have to do is read the facts. They're incredible. So I just encourage people to do as much of their own educating as they can.
And tell us how people can find out more about Numinous. Is there a website, Instagram, social media, anything like that? Where can people get a hold of your company and connect?
Yeah. You can check out our website, numinous.ca. We're on all social channels as well. So just encourage people to check there. We've got a pretty heavy resource bank of information there. And, you know, just feel free to reach out anytime. We're pretty open books. So. And very passionate. So it's getting us to stop talking about it. That's the tricky part. So
awesome. Well, thank you so much, brother, for taking the time to chat with me today. I really appreciate you, everything you're doing. A lot of great information you dropped today and just shared with us. And I'm looking forward to see how this grows, and excited, and hopefully soon there's Numinous in Toronto. And I know you guys are hopefully one day around the whole world, who knows, right?
That's it.
Keep up the great work, brother. Thank you. And we'll definitely chat soon.
Thank you, man. Really, really appreciate the support, and appreciate you as well.
Yeah, thanks, brother.
Thanks, man.